going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
And we believe that all of us need to take serious actions to limit day-to-day interactions and activities. And we all need to do our part to stop this virus from spreading.
That's Maryland Governor Larry Hogan announcing a series of actions to limit the spread of the coronavirus. New restrictions were announced after Maryland health officials confirmed the state's first known case of community transmission of the virus. What does this health crisis mean for Maryland residents and the government? Well, joining me to talk about it is Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. Also with me, WRC-TV News 4 Prince George's County Bureau Chief Tracy Wilkins. Lines are open if you have a question or comment. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lieutenant Governor, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. Tracy, good to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Always good being here.
Let me first ask you, Lieutenant Governor, what is the latest for the state of Maryland? There is, of course, the announcement yesterday about closing all schools statewide. What can you update us on today?
Well, we announced that there were additional people that were diagnosed with the COVID-19 virus, bringing us up to, I believe we are at 18 now. That was the last time I had heard, and the last time I was on a conference call was about 4:30. Keep in mind that these numbers are going to change and have been changing. A week ago, we had just three. And now we have 18. We do have another person in the state who is a Montana resident that didn't contract it here, but she traveled here to visit family. So that can be a difference where some people might be saying 19 versus 18. But typically where the person is a resident is where they're counted for national interests.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not as bad off as some places, but we're trying to prepare as best as possible. We expect that those numbers will go up as more people are diagnosed and tested. And we're just trying to prepare as best as we can to slow down the increase of the amount of people who are infected.
Yesterday, as I mentioned, there was the announcement that schools were going to close, but that happened just a few hours after, counties Montgomery and, Prince George's were, for example, trying to work out some of their logistics, expecting that schools were going to stay open. Can you talk to me a little bit about the lines of communication and how this is going to work going forward? Because these things are, as the governor said, changing not just hour by hour, but minute by minute.
Right. Yesterday, during one of our conference calls, the superintendent of schools, Dr. Sammons, recommended that we close the schools. And this was during a conversation with the governor's advisory committee, which is made up of several doctors and scientists from both Johns Hopkins, University of Maryland Medical, as well as a couple of other experts. And the feeling was that we needed to move forward after having the first community transmission, that we needed to really cut down on gatherings of people. And the concern was that kids could bring it to school and possibly transmit it to people, additional people in their homes, and particularly those who are elderly, because they're the ones who are really most at risk. So Dr. Sammons did talk to the various school superintendents after that decision was made, and that's how we were moving forward. But she is in conversations and in constant contact with the superintendents around the state.
Is this happening too fast for the members of the administration to get their arms around it?
No, I don't think it's happening too fast. We've been preparing for the last couple of weeks on this, for this. It's just changing. You know, it is changing quickly. And we're probably, I'd say we're moving away from daily numbers counts to really how do we address not just the people that are ill here, but we have Marylanders who are coming off of that ship in California, and many of them are currently at a military base in Georgia, and we're trying to see how the best way to get them home. So it's that as well as looking at where additional outbreaks may come from, and then how we address some of the issues that occur when you reduce the number of people gathering, when you close the schools, making sure that people are fed, particularly if you are closing senior centers where in many cases a person goes and gets, you know, one hot meal a day. It's making sure we can get food to them, and that's why we, you know, activated the guard, because they're very good at logistics, being able to potentially deliver food as well as kids that may be on meals, free meals at school. Mm-hmm. So we're preparing for it. We're prepared, but it is a constantly changing. Additional issues pop up every day.
Lieutenant Governor, this is Tracy Wilkins with NBC4 in Washington. Always good to speak with you. Wanted to ask you a couple of questions about the numbers in Prince George's County specifically. So I think that your Maryland total is going to come up a little bit more than what you said just a little bit ago. Prince George's County now saying that they have 7 cases
right,
total.
That's what I was hearing. Yeah.
Yeah, and then also this case of the community spread that happened in Prince George's County.
Right.
And that was the case that changed Maryland's take on this crisis and this pandemic and how it was going to handle it moving forward. As it stands, Prince George's has more cases of COVID-19 than any other area in the state, with 7 in Prince George's. That's one more than Montgomery County. It stands right now. Does the state have a plan for recognizing hotspots? Is there a number where you all would say this is particularly a problem area where we need to take it a step further?
We don't have an exact number. We talked about the question of hotspots, such as what New York did with New Rochelle. And they did what they did up there was a 1-mile radius around a particular area that they had a large number of people who were infected. We're not sure that that's the situation we have in Prince George's County. The county is geographically fairly large, so it's not where we would want to shut down the whole county because we have 7 individuals. One is community transmission, but the others are related to travel. And so, you know, as long as we can keep those individuals agreeing to quarantine you know, agreeing to stay away, and then the other efforts with regard to social distancing, I think we hopefully will be able to address this. But right now, we're not ready to designate an area as a hotspot.
Can we talk about, I'm
hold
sorry.
One second. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the coronavirus crisis in Maryland with Maryland's Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford, also NBC4 Prince George's County Bureau Chief Tracy Wilkins. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call right now. We will take your questions and comments as soon as they come in. Tracy, go right ahead.
So questions about testing. There have been concerns about testing and the fact that some of the testing is not being done in the places where folks are infected, but may be happening at labs outside of the state or in other areas. But just also questions about accessibility. Where does the state stand now on accessibility with testing?
Well, we are working with the federal authorities trying to get more tests, and Johns Hopkins is developing a test that they can do. Our state science forensic lab has the ability to do tests, and so the initial tests were done there. The community transfer first one was actually tested through LabCorp, but it was tested at the hospital. Anne Arundel Medical, they tested there, and it went through LabCorp. Now that we have LabCorp and Quest up, that should give us more capabilities with regard to getting tests turned around quicker. But the test kits are coming from the federal government, and we're continuing to work with them to make sure it's available once a doctor makes a determination that someone should be tested.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the coronavirus crisis in Maryland with Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. If you have a call, if you have a question or a call or comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Two quick questions for you, Lieutenant Governor. First of all, you were talking about the cruise ship docked in California. Do you know how many Marylanders are still on that ship?
From the information we have, there are none on the ship now. There are several that are in Georgia and some that are in transit.
Do you know how many?
We were told 12.
12. Are those 12 confirmed cases or 12 suspected cases?
None of them are showing symptoms at this time, but they will be quarantined, and we're insisting upon them being tested.
I see. Your thoughts about the president's declaration of a national emergency today, and what impact will that declaration have on Maryland's ability to fight the coronavirus?
Well, as was mentioned before, we're hoping for the additional tests to be available at different locations around the state. It provides resources to us because we're expending resources now. We expect as this continues to grow that there are going to be additional resources that we're going to have to expend and that the federal government can come in and assist us with it. But in terms of the, you know, the response, it's, the front line is state and local. So what we would look for from them is in many cases reimbursement, some assistance with regulatory waivers, which they've talked about doing. As it relates to some of the things that you can do in terms of moving people around, getting potential help from out-of-state medical professionals, as well as the type of equipment that you can use, the type of mask, just the whole, they recently lifted a restriction with the type of mask that could be used when performing this test. And so those are the kinds of things that state of emergency will help us with.
Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joseph calling from Lanham, my hometown. What's on your mind, Joseph?
Yeah, I was wondering about the closing of casinos. I noticed that there are several churches that have been closed because they're exceeding the 2-people limit. But I was wondering if the casinos would also be closed.
Lieutenant Governor?
Well, they'd have to abide by the 250-person gathering. So we're, you know, I would imagine they're bringing in more than 250 people. If that is the case, they're going to have to do that as well.
Lieutenant Governor, I have a quick question for you about the legislative session and what's happening there. The governor is saying that he was stepping aside from dealing with some of this work and wanted you to be the point person as he focused on COVID-19. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the issues, specifically the blueprint for Maryland's future, Kerwin, that needs to be looked at, and the Senate is next in line to decide whether or not that's going to pass. The HBCU law settlement is also something that legislators are expected to take a look at, but also some COVID-19 legislation, emergency legislation that needs to be passed. And session is scheduled to end by April 6th, but could end at any moment if you all decide that it's just not safe to continue. What will happen with the legislation?
Well, there is consideration now. We've spoken to the legislative leaders about possibly spending the session and then picking up again the remainder of the days that are left in the session at a later point. Because there is a concern that, you know, the collection of these individuals, the legislators, you know, coming together, meeting in caucus, meeting in meetings. Many of them are over 60. Some are older than that, and so they fit the high-risk area that we're concerned that we're holding these sessions, and it's something that can be deferred. The only thing that they're required to do under the Constitution is get a budget to us. And the governor stressed to the Senate president and Speaker Jones just yesterday in a meeting that we had with them that they should be working on that budget first, because we may need to suspend the legislative session and then pick it back up either in the summer or in the fall for the remaining days.
When will you know about the suspension of the legislative session? I mean, again, this is...
I think we'll know in another day or two.
I see. Let me go back to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. William calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, William. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is, okay, COVID-19 is now listed and it's out here in the world listed as a pandemic. I would like to know how come HIV and AIDS wasn't listed as a pandemic when the numbers of HIV and AIDS statistically came out years ago of the African-American community specifically at an 80 to 90% rate. Why is this a pandemic, and why wasn't HIV and AIDS listed as a pandemic?
You know what? That's an excellent question, William. Unfortunately, unless the governor has any input on that, I'm not sure if anyone on this panel today is truly qualified to answer that question. I think we would have to be a practicing medical professional, a physician, to actually answer that question. And I think it would be a disservice even if I were to give it a shot. Governor, your thoughts about that?
No, I agree with you.
Okay. Thank you so much, William. Thank you so much. I will say that as we continue to discuss this, I will ask that question of any physician that we have on this show. So please, I invite you to keep listening. Taylan calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Taylan. What's on your mind?
It's Tavon. Thank you, sir. Well, what's been on my mind is how ironic that this has gone viral, and it originated from China. So I was wondering, are there any type of leeways as far as how they are getting this matter resolved? And far as also for those who work in food service as well, and how much they're putting, you know, themselves at risk by coming to work due to this virus that, you know, gets kind of swept under the rug.
I'm not sure I understand your question. So you work in food service?
No, yes, I do. But I'm just saying also, like how nurses and doctors have serious roles, it should be also harder look and people who work in food service.
Well, to be quite honest, Tavon, I will say that everyone is trying to address this, from medical professionals to people who work in food service to TV and radio reporters. So I think there are definitely some adjustments that will have to be made, and we will continue to see this. But certainly as it relates to whether it's the CDC guidelines or the state that you live in, those are the leads that I think you need to certainly take. Listen, I need to take a break. Lieutenant Governor, are we going to lose you at 7:30, or do you have a few more minutes for us?
I have a couple of more minutes, so shortly after your break.
I appreciate that. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in 15 seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU, and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the coronavirus crisis in Maryland. We have on the line Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford, as well as News 4 Prince George's County Bureau Chief Tracy Wilkins. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lieutenant Governor, let me ask you again about the Trump administration's response to the crisis. When might we see an increase in testing in the state of Maryland per his statement about 1.4 million tests being available as soon as next week?
Yeah, I can't answer that. We'll know better when it is available, and I'd have to talk to our health department. Our health department is in touch with both the CDC and HHS directly and have conversations with them every day with regard to getting access to additional tests and proper procedures and protocol, as well as with our various hospitals and NIH in the state. So I'd have to defer to them in terms of when they project that we'll have the additional tests. But in the meantime, the main thing that we really have to do is make sure that individuals who are older, as well as those who have autoimmune deficiencies, that they are protected, that they are exercising the social distancing, that they're away from large crowds, because the average person that is coming down with COVID-19 is about 60 years old, but the average person who is dying from it is 80. Now, unlike the seasonal flu, it's not as fatal for younger people, and healthy young adults are able to resist it better or handle it better. But the older that you get, it is more damaging and can be more fatal. It's 10 times more fatal than the seasonal influenza, as well as 10 times more contagious, and that's what makes it a big challenge.
Lieutenant Governor, in Prince George's County, we had 12 firefighters who are now self-quarantined after coming in contact with that case of the gentleman who had COVID-19 due to community spread. And there have been questions about first responders and police officers and folks who may come in contact with these people and whether or not they have the protections that they need. Where does the state stand on that?
Well, what we've been trying to do is where a person is suspected of having it, and this individual was not because he had prior conditions and had been in the hospital fairly recently for a prior ailment. What we try to do is where a person is suspected to have COVID-19, that they're calling ahead to their doctor, not just showing up someplace or calling the emergency department, but then being able so that the doctor, or if they're calling to a hospital, that they can make arrangements, excuse me, for that person to be picked up by an ambulance where the people do have the equipment that they need. At this point, we are working through Maryland Emergency Management and other entities to work with the first responders in terms of what they have to be prepared for in terms of someone who may, you know, walk in or call the emergency department with regards to what they think may be flu symptoms or something else. In this case, this person thought it was a different issue based on the history of his ailments.
Final question, because I know we're going to lose you. Where are the testing centers going to be? Again, the president talked about these partnerships with Walgreens and other drugstore entities. Do you have any idea where these places are going to be, how that's going to work?
And the president said these things today. You know, we're working with our health department. They'll be talking to HHS and the other folks associated with implementing what the president is talking about. Mm-hmm. So at this point, we don't have the locations, but that's not to say by tomorrow morning we'll be able to identify some locations But right now, where he spoke a couple of hours ago, we don't have that information.
Lieutenant Governor, where is the best place for people to go for information for what's happening in Maryland? Where would you all like folks to go?
Go to help.maryland.gov, and that's the health department's website, and it will have information about the coronavirus and resources available and the up-to-date information with regard to those who've been diagnosed. One of the things I want to point out is that the first three individuals who were diagnosed a week ago, they have all been cleared at this point in terms of they have recovered and they are no longer in isolation. So for a lot of people, it is something that they're going to be sick and they can spread it, but it is something that you can live through.
Okay. Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford from the great state of Maryland, thank you so much, sir. Good luck to you, and I'm sure we will continue to be in touch, and we will have our ear to the ground. So thank you so much, sir, for spending some time with us. I want to, you know, talk to you a little bit, Tracy, about what's happening in Prince George's County. Prince George's County was not the first county to get this notice. Montgomery County was, but now we've seen all of this growth and the like. And, you know, there was even, you know, a story about my high school, Eleanor Roosevelt, clutch the pearls, you know, what's going on in my high school, certainly. But what, from your perspective in talking to people in the county, what is the level of concern?
That's an interesting question, because I think that the culture of, you know, Prince George's County is a predominant African-American county. We are people who have been through a lot. Mm-hmm. And so when we hear about things like a pandemic, you know, for a lot of folks, it's just one more thing for us to manage. And I think that that is that's the first mentality. The second thing that I'm hearing is we need prayer. And I'm hearing that from folks. I mean, this is a church-going community. We have mega churches in Prince George's County, congregations made up of thousands of people on Sundays. And so I think that there was a great deal of disappointment in not being able to go in and be together, which is, you know, something that the county does and that we do as a people when we're dealing with healing in any kind of tragic situation. And this is a very difficult one. And I think it was also difficult for people to begin to wrap their minds around how serious this all was. And as it continued to change and as we were getting more information, I think that people began to understand that this is, you know, more serious. Just 2 days ago, we were doing a story on Wednesday, Bible study day, elderly people, senior citizens leaving and going out to Bible study and saying, I am not going to class. Like, I have to be here with people who honestly are on the front line of what could happen if something goes wrong with this. So just trying to get our community to understand. I think that the county executive has done a very good job of communicating these issues in her press conferences and making it clear to the public as much as possible. I think that when the pastors of these churches started to communicate with their congregations yesterday and saying to folks on the internet and online and on Instagram that and Twitter that we're closing and that we need to listen to what the leaders of our state are saying and change some things so that everybody can be safe, that people really began to get that this is something that's serious.
You know, and I agree with you. One of the things that I find really, you know, fascinating to me is that as serious as Ebola was in the United States back in 2014 or so, that this is a much bigger issue, because this is not just, you know, impacting you know, some of the West African countries and people who are here, you know, in pieces and parts of the United States. I mean, we have this New Rochelle issue. We have this Washington State issue. We have this issue that, you know, one day we may have three in, for example, in Prince George's County, or four in Prince George's County. Now we have seven. And it just keeps, you know, for lack of a better term, it really blows up. And yet on social media and even in conversations with, you know, my circle, I'm a bit surprised that people are not taking this as seriously as our government officials say they should.
Well, I will say this. that when we look at the worst health outcomes in the state of Maryland, they're in Prince George's County and they're in Baltimore, mm-hmm. that in communities where we are dealing with people of color, we have a number of immune deficiencies and underlying issues already in our community. We have asthma, we have heart conditions, we have kidney conditions, we have all kinds of issues. And our elderly population, they have a number of health challenges that they are dealing with. I'm not surprised to see the numbers rising as quickly as they are rising in Prince George's County. It is imperative that the community listen to what its leaders are saying and that folks do what they can to limit contact, because medical resources and getting the medical attention and help that you need has always been a challenge in Prince George's County. They are working now to build a new hospital center so that there can be more adequate health or more adequate health help in the county. But in the meantime, you know, when we were listening to the director of the health department for Prince George's County and he talked about having resources here in the state, a lot of the resources that he named were outside of Prince George's County when he talked about the hospitals and the capacity. So these are things that residents need to be aware of, and it is reason to pay very close attention to what's happening, to take care of themselves and their environment, to practice the distancing, to no matter how small the group, go ahead and let's just stay in the house for a few days. But also what's really important is to support the seniors who need help and need attention, yes. right now, to check mm-hmm. on seniors, to check on folks who are used to getting out of the house but are now being told that they should go ahead and stay in. And there are a lot of churches that do that work and help. So in this time when folks in the community can't go in person to give, still consider supporting some of these organizations that are doing work in the community and are helping to get food out to folks who need it and are helping to take care of our seniors, especially seniors who now need to be taken care of in place.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Michael calling from Greenbelt. Michael, whoops, we lost Michael. Let's go to Brenda. Brenda calling from Landover. Brenda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I would like to know why we are shutting down the massive transit like they did in China. I mean, 250 people, I get that. But, you know, people going under the metro every day, all those people down there.
You said why they are?
Why we haven't.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because Metro actually today mentioned a curtailing of subway activity. I believe it was the Orange Line, for example. And it's not, you know, obviously, I believe it was last week, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser talked about this, you know, the double cleaning of Metro, and not just mass transit, obviously, but as you know, the Washington Convention Center is now shut down. And so I think these things are happening, and they are, but let me just offer this to you, Brenda, that to be quite honest, we've not seen anything like this in modern history. And I think that despite having an institutional knowledge of these kinds of things, and some of the best scientists and medical practitioners in the world here in the United States, this thing happened fast. It happened furiously. We had, you know, people literally, dying. And so I think that, you know, some of the, you know, our elected officials, politicians, and the like are really trying to invent solutions as this goes along. And to your point, stuff is shutting down. It really is. School systems are shutting down. Churches are shutting down. The mayor mentioned just today, 53% of all D.C. government workers will be working from home starting on Monday. And so I suspect that you actually will see some changes in mass transit even beyond today, because they are really trying to figure it out as it goes along.
And then also, if so many people are being told to stay home, the numbers are going to go down on their own. the traffic numbers, the numbers in Metro and on buses, et cetera. But there are some folks who have no other way to get around, who can't afford anything else. And I think that if we got to the point in this region where they needed to shut down Metro, that we would know by the response from the officials. And I think that, but for some people who do have to get to work, they have no other way to do it. But if those numbers are a little lower, and if people are practicing that distance that we're hearing about, that perhaps then that won't be the source of more cases, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Brenda, thank you so much for calling. You know, one of the other things when you're talking about the economy here in the D.C. Metro is linked to this, obviously, to the surrounding counties. The big concern that a lot of people are having is the residual effects of not just big business, small business, but, you know, people who are working hour, you know, by hour. And obviously we've had reports of, you know, some people with financial resources contributing and saying we're going to give basketball players going to give $100,000 and the like. But the reality is that's just a drop in the bucket. Over the next 2 weeks, which is where we are right now, we could see a devastating change to the economy in this area.
Yeah, and we're hearing from the federal government that the hope is that resources are going to make it to these families that need it. In the Prince George's County school system, they have a lot of temporary employees that work there, and folks who are concerned about what's going to happen while we're in this shutdown. And the CEO of the school system told me today they're going to pay those temporary workers. But if we go beyond the 2 weeks, what is that going to look like? So there are a number of people who are concerned about what's going to happen if they cannot get a paycheck. And the other side to that is that you have people who also don't have the health care that they need because of the kinds of jobs that they have. So what about those folks who are sick and who have the symptoms but are still going into work? So this is part of the reason that the idea is that we need to not only practice the social distancing, but also cut down on the numbers of people who are going into workplaces when they don't need to be, and cutting down on the large groups of people who are inside of buildings. But I can say that in terms of the economy, you know, at National Harbor in Prince George's County, the first case to come into the county was during the CPAC conference, and it was someone who participated in that conference from New Jersey, who was diagnosed after he returned to New Jersey. But because of that, we saw a number of U.S. lawmakers who had self-quarantined after having interaction with him. And so that news broke on that Saturday. We were there on that Monday in a ghost town.
Yeah.
A number of conventions that were expected to happen at the Gaylord had been closed. People weren't inside of the Gaylord. We're talking to folks who were inside of the hotel who were saying it's like, you know, it's just us and the people who work there. And this, and all of National Harbor, it was a beautiful 70-degree day. It was completely empty down there. And so were the restaurants. So without question, some of these places where we're used to seeing tourists, we're going to begin to see a difference. And what's going to happen when, you know, our cherry blossoms are supposed to be in full bloom next week.
And the cherry blossom parade has been canceled.
They're looking at the possibility of streaming it online.
You're right. Streaming the blossoms themselves, you know, don't go down there. But, CEO Golson was talking before they got the word from the governor's office about closing of schools. One of the things that really struck me was when she was talking about those students who are getting free and reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. And again, this isn't, you know, she talked about it. And
more than 60%.
Yeah. And it just really struck me that, you know, she was saying, well, we're going to feed these people, we're going to take care of these students and the like, and then schools closed. And so they had to do this shift where they are going to provide these lunches for these students in their centers. And as a matter of fact, on our website on WHUR.com, there is a list of where you can go. And it's from 11 to 1 o'clock, and there are several sites. But I'm just talking
all around the county,
exactly,
in the areas where most of their free and reduced meal students reside.
But administratively, just having to go, whoa, we have to now adjust, which is what governments are supposed to do. But the reality is governments are not speedboats. A lot of times they are, battleships. They turn slowly. And having to make these kinds of adjustments and then having families and residents having to make these adjustments, this is some real work.
And it is. And I think that what's happening with the school systems that have to quickly figure these things out, it is this is going to be a very difficult trial because we're talking about kids with abilities when normally that's what we're thinking about. But there are kids with extreme learning disabilities, with physical impairments. These are children who are in the Prince George's County school system and require a lot of assistance to make it through the school day. These are kids who cannot learn on an online, learning space. They need to be in the classroom. They need their guides. They need their assistance. And for a lot of the parents who parent these kids, they need that help as well with teaching them and helping them to move through the school system and move through their next grade. So a lot of questions about how this is going to work for a number of families who are dealing with very difficult challenges. And now we're talking about the possibility of them trying to figure out how am I going to get the meals that I need for my kids. A lot of these families depend on lunch at school and depend on, and in some cases, dinner at school and breakfast at school.
So the only hot meals of the day.
The only hot meals of the day. And when you're talking about more than half of your school system being in this position, that is a major burden for the school system. And hopefully there are folks who are paying attention to that. There are a lot of social issues that in Prince George's County, that school system has to deal with. And I mentioned when we were talking with the Lieutenant Governor, the blueprint for Maryland's future, that is supposed to be the great equalizer. Getting that legislation passed is important to the Democrats in the state of Maryland and to a number of teachers and educators who feel like this is going to be the thing that helps to equalize things like internet in the home, social services for all students, regardless of zip code, that folks are going to be able to get an education. So this is an important legislative session. And I don't think that the coronavirus could have hit at a worse time.
Yeah.
And not only the budget and getting that passed by that July date, or Maryland will not have, they will have to suspend all of, we'll have to suspend the government if they're not able to get that budget passed, but there's also important legislation. So when we talk about what's happening right now in dealing with this virus, there are some families, and as usual, the least among us will be the hardest impacted and the hardest hit if we're not able to get those social services to the families that need it the most.
You mentioned several things. One of the things that Dr. Golson mentioned also yesterday, and there was a concern about shutting down schools, and specifically as it dealt with students who have free and reduced lunch. And she was concerned that those families may not have access to the internet and may be at a disadvantage when it comes to distance learning. And I think that's really going to be problematic, and it's something that they're going to have to figure out. One of the things that was mentioned by Mayor Bowser today, and this is what I was trying to explain to Brenda, is that our city leaders and our county and state leaders, they're working this out literally as it happens. I mean, if we were flies on the wall listening to this, I can imagine them saying, oh, and one more thing, because one of the things that Mayor Bowser mentioned today was daycare. D.C. does not operate daycare, and she says now they're looking for contractors to come forward. That means, can you come forward between Friday and Monday, and how are we going to work this out, particularly around places like the hospitals, where those daycares, may be shut down, or those workers are going to need that. That is also kind of a logistical problem. And to the point about the legislature also, that the Lieutenant Governor made really, really clear. He said a lot of our lawmakers are seniors, and they are working in close quarters, certainly more so in the House than in the Senate, but still. And And well, they are at risk.
And we see what's happened with our federal government. Mm-hmm. And the Capitol, you know, Congress has changed its rules about who can come in for now. The staffs are working on a skeleton staff for now. And, you know, but these are folks who need these people around them to get the work done. So, but even, so the point is to try to protect our lawmakers as much as possible. They have to meet in person. They have to be there to vote in person. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and it needs to be done quickly. And so these are all things that we're considering and taking a look at. And in some cases have never considered before.
Yeah.
But this is what a pandemic can do. And then also with our churches, and I just want to circle back around to this, because we talk about on these, you know, the lofty, you know, what's happening with government and these. But for some of these churches in these communities that are now closing, if they're not getting that money from their congregants, if folks aren't coming in there and giving tithes and offerings, this could put some of these churches in jeopardy for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to pay the mortgage, you know, and some of them.
And the community services
and
that
the community
they provide
service
will
that they
be
provide.
Yeah,
and
truncated.
The food that they provide and the senior services that they provide. And so there is a lot that is at stake right now with and then also our nonprofits. You know, we have a number of nonprofits that operate in throughout our area that offer all kinds of artistic and athletic and social services. And these are folks that depend on delivering the services that people have paid for and donated. So, yeah, I mean, this is something that everyone has their fingers crossed, hoping that staying in the House for 2 weeks will help to make a difference in our numbers, and that we'll start to see those numbers come down, and we'll start to see people feeling better so we can get back to operating as usual. But I would hope that the hope is for everyone that when we come out of this, we won't operate as usual, but we'll learn from this and really take a look at what our safeguards and our plan Bs are and how effective they are.
Let me quickly go to Jennifer. Jennifer calling in from D.C. Jennifer, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is this. If we put God back where he's supposed to be at,
mm-hmm.
then we wouldn't have none of these things. God said, if my people who are called by my name turn from their wicked ways, I'll heal the land.
Okay.
Now, I hear y'all talking about the schools and stuff. When I was a little girl coming up, my mother fixed breakfast, lunch, and dinner for me. We didn't have the free lunches and all that. Now, I understand about the poverty and all that that's going on. But what I'm saying, I'm 66, and I lived in Washington, D.C. in the Trinidad area, 1219 State.
Okay, I've got 30 seconds. Make your point real quick, Jennifer,
okay.
Please.
People need to put God back where he needs to be at.
Okay, and well, so certainly let me say this. As we said earlier in the program, it's going to require a great deal of prayer, a great deal of faith, and a great deal of paying attention to what is going on in your community. And so, you know, for the faith-based community and others, you're going to check on the Jennifers, the 66-year-olds and the 76-year-olds and the 80-year-olds and everyone else, because we're definitely going to need a hand in this. And certainly this is not going to make our job any easier either, Tracy. You certainly on the streets and here at our university, we are making changes just as colleges and universities are.
But I tell you, I will say this, Harold, it's a good reminder of how important it is to have local news and information.
Yes.
And local television, local newspapers, and local radio stations that are giving information in real time, because our folks need it right now. They need to hear it from us, from voices and people who they trust and know they can depend on. So this is a reminder.
I would say right now, perhaps more than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a situation where we do need boots on the ground when it comes to getting that information out. Tracy Wilkins, good to see you.
Always good to be here.
Glad you are in the pink, and good, and I'm going to get the forearm elbow with you. Look, take care. We'll be talking soon.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, March 13th. Yep. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Malek Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night and have a wonderful weekend. But how would you-